We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
In this hour of focus, we will be looking for your questions about consumer electronics. And really what we mostly talk about on these shows is audio and video. And our guest for the program is Rich Warren. He has been with us a number of times before. He has written about consumer electronics for different specialty publications. He has a regular column that appears in the News Gazette. He also is the host of a little show called The Midnight Special. Well, yeah, and which is a good show, which if you haven't heard it, you should check it out. And every once in a while, he's here on the show to talk about audio and video. And we've done that for some time now. People seem to appreciate the chance to ask the questions because things continue to change. It can be very confusing, and he's always really good at explaining where things are. And, you know, if you're thinking about buying something in particular, some piece of electronic gear, helping with what are the important things here? What should you think about? What should you look for? What kind of questions do you want to ask? So if you have any and all of that, those kinds of questions, I know he will do his best to give you an answer. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455, will-talk at edu is the email. Well, it's good to have you here once again.
It's a delight, and I know you already have a phone call, but I want to just say a few things because we are now at this, what I call a tipping point, where in the old days, which was last week, you could own media. That is, you could own DVDs, mm-hmm. CDs. Mm-hmm. You could go out to the store and buy a physical hard copy piece of entertainment. And now we're at the point where that's going to go away, that everything's going to be provided via the internet. And God help people who don't have broadband, because they're going to be more or less disenfranchised. You can see all the empty video stores around town because other than the Redbox DVD vending machines at the supermarket or at the drugstore, it's getting harder and harder to get DVDs. And what they do have in these machines are pretty much the pop stuff, not a great selection of movies. There are a couple of places left in town that do specialize in a wide range. But I find it interesting also that you only have two gateways if you live in Champaign-Urbana to the internet. It's either the phone company or the cable company, neither of which are highly regarded by most of their subscribers, especially the cable company. And if you live in one of the small outlying towns, you're pretty much stuck with the cable company because now that Frontier owns the phone system in most of the surrounding area, maybe they'll do some upgrades, but DSL is not available in a lot of small towns. You simply have Mediacom. And so they have you, so you say, okay, I don't want to pay them to watch TV, so I'll watch TV on the internet. Well, of course, they're going to find a way to charge you for that access to the internet that's going to be pretty astounding. Plus, all the free material on the internet that you think is free today, like Hulu, is going to begin charging for their content. Mm-hmm. So there's no way around it that you're going to be paying a lot to watch movies. And right now, there's a lot of free music on the internet. When all this copyright thing settles down, they're going to have to up the costs of all these free services that start charging for things like Pandora or have a lot of ad revenue-supported services because it's not going to be the free cornucopia that we've had for the past 10 or 15 years. So we are at a real change in the future. Now, I think 15 or 20 years ago, I predicted that we wouldn't ultimately have regular things like CDs or what was coming, DVDs, that to be on a home server. Well, that's not the case anymore. You're not even going to have a home server per se. You're going to get it instantaneously from the internet. And when broadband becomes fast enough, when there's more fiber optic broadband, it won't matter whether it's stored at home because you'll have very little lag between when you request something and when it begins to show on your TV or you hear it on your sound system. So the future is also what's the future of radio. When it's easy to get entertainment, news, talk, whatever, over the internet, what is the purpose of a local radio station any longer? And considering, well, this station and some of the other competing commercial stations, 50% of the schedule is already from a national source of some sort, then well, where will local programming go? Who will be responsible for the local programming? So there's a whole change coming, and it's coming faster than most people realize. That economically, the powers that be, the industry, in quotes, the entertainment industry, the news industry, really is now pretty much wanting all these things we've taken for granted from other ways of receiving it. Now it will be all coming over the internet. And what the future of this, you know, the net neutrality. I don't talk about computers in the show, but you can't avoid it because everything now, you buy these boxes, all these funny names and Boxy and et cetera, are all basically miniature computers that are designed specifically to feed content from the internet, whether it's audio, video, whatever. You can buy one of these boxes. And depending on which stream you want to watch or hear, they're custom tailored. Now, Blu-ray players have the same usability, same functionality of picking out certain internet streams. And besides giving you these Blu-ray high-definition discs that you can watch, it also acts as a gateway to the internet for certain content. So we are at a real strange point here. I remember in 1968, I'm giving away my age, when I showed up to U of I as a freshman with my typewriter in hand and my little stereo system. And I thought, you know, I was fixed. I had this wonderful electric typewriter, which most kids didn't have in those days. And now, you know, they go to a museum to see a typewriter. Yeah. It's a whole different way of looking at things. And those of us over 40 or 50 really do have to adjust. Reading my reader email from the News Gazette, I am amazed because people are being really left out in the dark or in the cold. Because the things are changing so rapidly. And it's, in the old days when I gave advice to people in the 80s and into the 90s about how to connect your speakers or your amplifier, plug in your CD player, it was a pretty simple narrative. And now people ask me questions I cannot answer because the choices are so vast as far as this internet stream versus that internet stream or this connection to a home server versus I can't tell people how to connect their home servers, how they're going to connect the internet and have it come out of every radio or every box all over their house, depending which system you use. It's just vast. I mean, Bose tried to simplify it with a little USB key, and you can plug that in your computer, and it'll come out one of their Bose radios, and that made it very simple. But that limits you to a one-on-one kind of relationship versus having all these speakers around the house receiving the same thing. So it's just mind-boggling. And every time I sit down to write a column or get a reader email from one of my readers in the Gazette, I have to really start thinking about what this is all about and how I'm going to answer this question, how I'm going to satisfy their wants and needs, which is a whole different world than it was 15 years ago or even 10 years ago. So that's my spiel for my preface, and I know you've got this call.
Well,
so.
And I just one more thing. I would just underscore the fact that, yes, indeed, we've been having these conversations for a long time. Good 10 years ago, maybe more, you said, this is where we're going to go. This is where we're going to be. Can't tell you when exactly it's going to happen, but you said, yeah, this is, and in fact, it turned out you're right. I'm sure you weren't the only person who was saying this is where we're going to be. So, and the other thing is that people in media, newspapers, magazines, music, television, movies, broadcasting, you know, everybody talks very bravely about how exciting this is and all the great new opportunities, but we really don't have a clue. don't have a clue how we're going to survive in this new atmosphere.
The technology is virtually in place if we get broadband to more homes. The only issue now is the financial issue, the economics of making this work. How much do we charge people? How do we charge people? All these kind of issues. But I want to go back to one other thing, and I think it was 1979, maybe 1980, at the Consumer Electronics Show, one of the early shows in Las Vegas. Sony had a display, and they said, this is the future, and it showed a whole house music system, basically. I don't think, and video was tied into it. They had no way to execute this. I mean, this was a very expensive thing for them to do. They had a mini computer, you know, a deck mini computer. This was before the IBM PC, even. And they said, this is what the future is going to be for your home entertainment, that you can in remote control and do this and get that in any room. And everybody was saying, oh, yeah, right. I mean, if you got, you know, $150,000 and a mini computer. And that always made an impression on me because I knew that it was ahead of its time, but it was going to happen. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it has. And when you look at an iPhone or an iPad, this is a whole brave new world of what is available. Everybody wants to watch movies on their telephone now, or their entire library of photos. Instead of a scrapbook, it's on their iPhone. They want to be able to stream music from the internet. They can do that on their iPhone or iPad or whatever. And there's an irony here, too, because this shouldn't be an Apple product. It should be a Sony product. Sony was the one who pioneered this area of consumer electronics, of home entertainment, and they dropped the ball because of mini-disc. They were so focused on mini-disc that they forgot there were other ways and things they needed to do to approach the future. And so Apple just comes along and says, we have the technology for this. All we have to do is find somebody to manufacture it, because Apple's not a manufacturing company like Sony was. Apple doesn't make anything. They simply design things and send them over to Asia to have them made. Sony had the capability of actually building products. And now even Sony has given up building things and simply designed stuff and sends it to China to be made. But if Sony hadn't become so fixed on mini-disc and its attendant technologies and immediately gone to solid-state storage and dropped the silly 8-track compression scheme in favor of MP3, then there wouldn't be an iPod from Apple. It would be some comparable Sony product, and Sony would have taken over the world instead of Apple. But it's amazing how you make one mistake in a company that gave us so many wonderful electronics, and Sony is still playing catch-up. Mm. And so this is, you know, and someday, maybe 5 years from now, someday or 10 years from now, if Steve Jobs dies or leaves Apple and somebody takes their eye off the ball at Apple, it will be another company who will rise up from nowhere and say, oh, here's the product you really want. Mm. And suddenly, there's no way to predict consumer fads, but you can pretty much see what people are looking for. And right now, Apple has been absolutely incredibly on the ball in following that curve. In 5 years, that may not be the case, but I have to laud them, because they really figured out what we want and how they're going to provide it to us and how they're going to make a huge profit doing it. So
okay. Well, we got a caller here in Champaign, and let's get them right here. Line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have a set of blast from the past questions, which should be well within your comfort zone, Rich. I have a retirement hobby of digitizing my analog collection, vinyl, including LPs, 45s, 78s, and my cassettes, quite a lot of them. And typically what I do is compile them into jukebox CDs that run about 13 hours or so I can play in our car, which is convenient. So my questions are, when I play back the LPs, I'm using the free Audacity sound editor, and it provides equalization. Do I need to actually go in and say, like, equalize it with the RIAA curve?
Well, it depends how you're feeding it into your computer. If you're going through a preamplifier, an old-fashioned preamplifier, it's already been equalized, and therefore you don't have to re-equalize it. If you're feeding it straight from the phono cartridge or from a preamp that doesn't have...
It has a built-in preamp. I'm using an Audio-Technica PL120 turntable.
Okay.
With a built-in preamp.
Yeah, no, that's a very good question, because I don't know. You'll have to check with Audio-Technica to see if that built-in preamp has the equalization curve. I would suspect it does, since just about any preamp that comes with a turntable is adjusted to RIAA equalization. So check with them. If it does have equalization, then you definitely don't want it in Audacity. But if it doesn't have the equalization curve, then you want Audacity to do it for you. It's amazing what you can do in the digital world. It's so much more accurate than what you do in the analog world that you almost don't want a preamp with equalization, because they can do it better digitally than they can do it better than the analog circuits in the old-fashioned preamps.
Okay. Do I need to do an equalization for my cassette tapes when I digitize them?
No. There's no way, the way the cassette machines are designed, there's no way you can get an output that isn't already equalized.
Okay. And considering the tape machine, which is a Pioneer Elite dual well machine, do I need to worry about degaussing the heads, particularly if I'm only doing playback?
Well, probably not. It's probably not going to be an issue, but it probably wouldn't hurt every 100 hours or so, if you know how to do it and have a degausser to do it. It can build up. It's more of a problem with recording than playback, but you can get a magnetic field develop around the heads occasionally, and it wouldn't hurt if you do it properly. But the thing is to do it properly. That is to move the degausser very slowly away from the head. Don't just wave it around the head and then pull it back, because that's going to make things worse. But you have to actually have the proper unit and then move it back very slowly, so it takes maybe a full minute to move it back a foot or two from the head.
Okay, I've read in researching the thing on the net somebody who said that don't even bother with degaussers that look like a pencil, but to get the really big heavy ones with the bulbous end, because they're the only ones that have sufficient magnetic field. Do you agree with that?
Well, I think that's true for open reel tape machines, but the heads are so tiny in a cassette machine that I don't think you need a monster demagnetizer, degausser, to deal with the very small magnetic fields you're going to find in a cassette deck. In fact, if it's too powerful, it could actually hurt the heads.
Okay, and my last question, is an LP cartridge okay for playing back 45 RPMs? I know I need a separate 78 RPM cartridge for the 78s, but I'm not too sure about the 45s.
No, the 45s have the same micro grooves as the LP, so that should be okay. You are in an interesting quandary here, and this is interesting, is that the 78 RPM records do not have the RIAA curve, the equalization factor. And so if you play them back through a preamp that has a built-in non-defeatable RIAA curve, you're actually going to get added distortion because you're equalizing something that doesn't need to be equalized.
Curiously enough, the latest version of Audacity has inverse.
Excellent. Okay. Then when you're doing 78s, assuming that your preamp has RIAA, and I'm guessing it does, that is terrific to remove that for 78s. And yes, you don't need a separate cartridge. The cartridge is fine. It's a stylus that's different. Any cartridge will work. It's that many companies do offer a 78 RPM stylus for their cartridge.
Well, the turntable had a separate socket in it to keep a separate head shell, so I bought a separate head shell, and I have yet to mount the Shure M78 cartridge into it yet, but that was what...
Okay, that's fine, because in the old days, basically, Shure and Audio-Technica and everybody actually had a separate 78 stylus, because the 78 groove is huge. I mean, it's the difference between the Sangamon River and the Mississippi River. I mean, the 78s are like the Mississippi, and the LPs are like the Sangamon. So you can see the vast difference in the groove size, and that's why you need a different stylus, and I guess in your case, cartridge with a different stylus in it. So,
and as to what you said at the beginning of the program, I have to sympathize some, but at my stage in life, I figure I've got it. I've got all the LPs and recordings that I really want, and I'm not interested in getting stuff off the Internet. So good luck with all of this.
Thank you.
All right. Our guest in this hour of Focus is Rich Warren. He is an electronics reviewer, has a regular column in the News Gazette. His writing has appeared in other specialty publications on audio and video. Every once in a while, he's here on the program. We talk about consumer electronics, and really what we're concentrating on here is audio and video. And if you have questions about equipment, you can give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455, email will-talk@illinois.edu. Chicago is our next caller. We're on line four right here. Hello.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a while since you've been on, Rich. I find all this fascinating because I go back to the days of Milton Berle and I Love Lucy and all of that. When if the first person in the neighborhood got a TV, everyone was over there. So I find this very interesting. But I find I have two questions. One, the first one is, do you need a computer to listen to HD radio?
No.
Oh, I see, because I was told that you did.
No.
Ah, good. The second one, I was listening to another computer show, and apparently Congress is debating that in a national emergency, the president have the power to press a button and block out certain sections of the Internet? Have you heard anything about this?
No, but I think it would be very difficult to do that in any kind of expeditious manner, because the Internet is so complex and there are so many sources. For example, the person who leaked these papers to WikiLeaks, those are mirrored all over the world. So the Pentagon could say tomorrow, okay, we're cutting that server off, we're cutting that ISP off, we're cutting that guy off. They can't do it because it's coming back into the country from hundreds of other sources that you can, that have to cut everybody's access, basically. And I don't see how they could do this in a reasonable amount of time. Yeah, over the course of a couple of months, I mean, they do it in China all the time, but they're set up to do it. We're not.
Well, it's ironic because China is one of the biggest counterfeiters in the world in terms of copying movies and disc and that kind of thing. So, well, at least that's what I've heard.
Yeah, also, you know, the United States is one of the very few countries, really, that has no censorship of the Internet. Even Australia has censorship on the Internet. And so we are living a charmed life here, and there are ways to reduce our ability to find certain things, but at this point, this country isn't set up to execute that. So I doubt that, you know, unless, and also it would be illegal to do it at this point, unless Congress passed the legislation.
Well, I had heard that on another show, and I just wondered. I wondered how they could do it, too. And as far as the WikiLeaks thing is concerned, I think they're too late. I mean, this stuff has gone all over the world.
Right, exactly. Once with the Internet, in the old days, you know, they could stop the New York Times from publishing something. I know this is far afield from the purpose of this program, but you could actually physically stop the newspaper from getting out. Once it's on the Internet, it's the cat. The cliche has never been so true. The cat is out of the bag, and it's out there. So it's instantaneous, and it's worldwide. And we're living in a different era. And you're right. I mean,
you can press a button today and it automatically goes all over the world. So.
I mean, right now they are have developed ways that if you download a movie illegally from some server in China, they're still going to find out that movie that came to you. There are ways of doing that, and they can track you down. It's difficult, but it's possible. But it still is not a flawless means of detection of pirated materials. So.
Well, now, if you download that movie, and I've always wondered about this, that the Chinese have made it easy for you to download that movie, but wouldn't that be an excellent way to install spyware on your computer?
Oh, yeah, that's very common, too. If people go to websites that are giving them something for nothing, but they're not, because the website may also be giving you things you don't know about that you're not expecting, and there's all kinds of ways to hide things in what seem like innocuous downloads, whether it's a piece of software that you're downloading or an illegitimate movie. And that's another thing that the movie studios and have in their favor, is that if you do it legitimately, you are guaranteed a clean download. If you,
yeah, I'd be very careful about that if I were people.
Yeah, so...
Okay, thanks a lot,
sure.
Rich.
All right. I have an email here from someone who says, here's an old tech question. He bought his nephew a 4-track sound mixer that works with Type 2 cassette tapes. And it turns out, he says, they can be very expensive now that they're pretty much been discontinued. He says, I do have a few, though. What I'm writing about is this. I understand Type 2 cassettes aren't universally playable. Wants to know, will a good dual tape player allow you to successfully copy a Type 2 recording onto a Type 1 tape?
Actually, and this is, you certainly can do that, yes. And supposedly, they are pretty universal. Most cassette decks have a Type 2 setting, or what's called high bias setting, or chrome setting, whatever. Playback, actually, it's the recording that's mainly different, the high bias, more than the playback. Hmm. So your playback setting won't be that different. Also, if you need to adjust it, the gentleman who called with the Audacity computer program, it can, and various other more expensive where you have to pay for the software, but there are various programs on the Internet where you can custom tailor the sound of your what comes through. So you can say high bias or whatever, but it generally was a recording setting, not a playback setting. So it's Dolby that you have to be concerned about. If you have a machine that you have Dolby B encoded tapes or Dolby C encoded tapes, and your machine doesn't have a feature to play those back, then what you'd want to do is be played into the computer to something like Audacity, which can decode them. Or you can find other programs on the Internet that will decode them for you, and then you'll have a straight-sounding recording. So I don't think you have to worry about playing back your Type 2 tapes. I think you're pretty universally okay on that.
All right. Well, hope that helps. Again, other questions, you can give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, email will-talk@illinois.edu.
Let me address a question that came in before the program started.
Oh, yeah, sure.
That I think people would be interested in about recording TV shows. I mean, your VHS is on its last legs, and besides that, now with all the digital stuff and HD TV, and suddenly you're like, how do you use the VHS? And the quality is so terrible on the new TVs, because the new TVs are so good that VHS looks that much worse. Mm-hmm. It never was good, but now it looks even worse. And what do you do about that? And unfortunately, there aren't a lot of options. I, for example, bought a custom-designed computer for $600 that records TV shows. It's a regular PC that is optimized for recording. And even that is not perfect because the tuner cards that you can get, which are cheap, they're $80, $90, $100, don't tune the digital channels of the cable company. It can only tune the analog channels of the cable company. The cable companies have deliberately now made their digital channels out of reach of anybody unless you have their box. Now, of course, the computer will work if you have the cable company box and feed that into the computer, then you can record. But it really angers me that the formerly cable-compatible devices, whether it's your TV, which had cable tuning, or the computer, can't reach the digital channels. Even the ones you pay for and subscribe to, you can't tune them. And the FCC has thrown up its hands. Everybody's given up on cable card, which was the solution to that. That's gone, pretty much so. So you're really in a tight boat. And the cable company or the satellite provider pretty much has you with your hands tied that if you want a recorder, the best thing to do is rent it from them. And normally they'll give you a pretty good price. I know the satellite people usually throw it in for free if you buy a one-year subscription to their big package. And the cable company, I don't know what they're charging per month for it, but it's probably a little bit cheaper than TiVo. The other option is if you want your own box that you own, you get a TiVo, which is a great thing, except you're paying about $13 to $14 a month to subscribe to TiVo. Without the subscription, the box itself is useless. You own the box, but the subscription is what makes it possible. Typical in this computer world, again, you're downloading the rights to use the box. And without their menuing system and everything, the box is just a dumb piece of hardware. And I resent the fact that $13 a month for a program guide. Now, yeah, you can subscribe for 3 years and it comes down to about $10 a month or something like that. But it's pretty outrageous to pay that much for the program guide after you've paid the $200 for the box. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. But that's the only way to really have a reliable and easy-to-use way to record stuff that you want to see. And TiVo will work in tandem with various cable boxes or cable tuning, et cetera, and or satellite systems. But it's a pretty ugly thing out there. For example, Dish Network was offering a box that was very similar to TiVo, and you could get it for free when you subscribe to Dish Network. And TiVo sued them because there was some sort of patent infringement, and TiVo has won four out of the five court cases so far. And right now there's an injunction staying the fact that there's a possibility that TiVo may require Dish Network to send out a signal that destroys all these boxes, that disables them, if TiVo wins its final court case. Or otherwise, Dish Network has to pay them some enormous amount in the millions and millions of dollars for this patent infringement. So who loses? The consumer loses. We always seem to be on the losing side of these industry titans. And I know a lot of people don't like government regulation, and they don't want the government involved with these sort of things. And the government has been uninvolved for the past, basically, 15 years. But it was great in the days of Ma Bell when everybody had the same disadvantage. And the government told Ma Bell how much it could charge, and then the Ma Bell offered you these options, all regulated, where they would make X amount of profit. And you knew that your next-door neighbor and the guy down the street and everybody had the same options you did at the same price. That doesn't exist anymore. So people who are under Mediacom may actually get a better deal than people who are getting Comcast, for example. Mm-hmm. Mediacom serving the outlying areas of Champaign-Urbana. And the other problem is, at least in Champaign-Urbana, you have two choices. You have AT&T, which is rolling out UVerse, which is their all-in-one system, using fiber optic up to the street corner and then copper wires to your house, versus Comcast, which is basically copper wires all the way to your house as far as cable wires. And you have two choices, at least. People in the outlying areas, basically what was General Telephone, then became Verizon, didn't put a nickel into infrastructure in the past 20 years in their systems. When they just sold them to Frontier Communications, which has taken over all the old Verizon areas, all the way from St. Joe to Mahomet, all these areas. Whether Frontier will now offer DSL, will put in the infrastructure to provide DSL, so people at least have an option on their computer access, broadband, is up in the air. It seems like Frontier is eager to get more subscribers and may actually upgrade the system, but they don't have a lot of money either. So people in the outline, if you don't go with Mediacom, you don't get broadband, you don't get television, you don't get anything except over the air, which is why so many people who write to my column have talked about antennas, and we've talked endlessly about antennas. Mm-hmm. And if you're in a good location, like I am, you can get virtually every local station via roof antenna. People in Chicago have it much easier because 90% of the tower, the transmitting towers, are on top of what used to be the Sears building, Sears Tower now, I guess the Willis Tower, and a few of them are on the Hancock Center. But they're all basically in the same direction. That is, if you live out in La Grange or you live out in Forest Park or you live out in Winnetka, you point your antenna downtown, period. And you get, in Champaign-Urbana, you have, if you're in the right location, if you're in the west quadrant of town or in the western small towns, you can point your antenna pretty much in a line that goes through Monticello, where WILL's tower is, and then Decatur, and you can get channel 17, and in a way it also picks up in Seymour, what used to be channel 3, I guess what channel 49, whatever it is now, which is CBS. Right. So you can get three stations in a line. But then you have WICD, which is at right angles to that. You have the Fox stations, which are at right angles to that, or 180 degrees from where you're pointing your tower toward Decatur. And so you end up having to have either a rotor or two antennas to get everything, because it's so frustrating here when you can't get a single antenna to do all the work for you. And if you're in the right location, sometimes you can get one antenna to work, but it's tricky.
Well, let me ask you, I was going to ask you another question, but now we just have another caller, so let's talk with him. Champaign County, right here, line one. Hello.
Hi. WILL was sending out a little device to go in between the tuner, the free tuner that some of us got with the coupon, and a regular antenna. And because WILL is on the VHF band with a special permission to stay there, I'm having a little bit of a hard time. I sort of jury-rigged a VHF section and a UHF section on an old powered tuner, and it, depending on the weather, works well, but when it's rainy out, I just kind of lose Create TV, which is a problem. So I was wondering if you knew what that matching thing was. And
I assume it's some sort of matching transformer for impedances to convert 300 ohms to 75 ohms or vice versa, which you would need. A lot of the older indoor antennas are 300 ohms. That's all I can figure out. But you do bring up a very good point, and I've written about this in my column, is under a previous engineering regime here at WILL, it was thought that broadcasting on UHF requires a lot more power than on VHF. It's you have to put out 4 to 5 times more power for the same coverage area. Maybe it's the engineers can correct me on the amount, but it's a vastly greater amount of power to cover the same amount of area on UHF because it's a higher frequency. And that's very expensive. A lot of electrical bills, a new transmitter, a more expensive transmitter. So WILL begged with the FCC, which was not entirely in favor of this, to stay on the VHF band and move down from channel 12 to channel 9. So, and WGN in Chicago wasn't terribly pleased either at that time, because when they were still analog, it was interfering with their analog signal in the fringe areas of Kankakee, for example. So WILL got the special dispensation. Well, what they weren't thinking about was every other station in this market is up there in UHF in the new digital world. And UHF is a very simple antenna. It requires very short elements. It's very inexpensive. The elements are 3 or 4 inches long. And it's a very easy antenna to mount and point, or you can get one of these bow tie antennas, and it's still a very simple antenna compared to a VHF antenna, which has those long rods. Even though channel 9 is at the upper end of VHF, it still requires rods that are substantially longer than the UHF. And so what happens, if you live in the western part of Champaign or fairly close to Monticello, you can pick up WILL television with a UHF antenna. I do it at home. I get great reception. But if you live anywhere else and you have any kind of conflict as far as trees or terrain, or you're more distant from Monticello, you truly need a VHF antenna just for WILL television. All the other stations you can use a UHF antenna for. So it further complicates. You have to buy a combination antenna bay. They still sell them. You can go to any of the Best Buy or Radio Shack or anybody, but they're big and clumsy and expensive. So you have this little tiny UHF part on this monster And you can cut off the big elements, the really long, you know, 3-foot-long rods. Those are for channel 3, which we don't have anymore. You can snip those off. Makes no difference because that doesn't work for channel 9, where you need, I forget the length, and one of the engineers could probably run in and tell me the exact length of the rod for channel 9. But one of my readers did that. He bought a conventional big antenna and just snipped off all the real long rods, which are not necessary anymore, just to get WILL television. In retrospect, it probably would have paid for WIL to have spent the money, got the UHF transmitter, been up there and wherever everybody else is up there in the 20s or 30s, and then a single UHF antenna would have done the trick for everybody. So we have this double whammy here of not only having all the stations in different directions, but having a single VHF digital station among all the UHF digital stations. So in the old days, see, when we had channel 3 on the VHF band, then it wasn't so bad. With 3 and 12, okay, it was worth having a VHF antenna. But now everybody's up there except WILL television. So that also complicates reception problems. And again, if you're close enough to the tower and you don't have any terrain problems, a UHF antenna will pick up channel 9, which used to be channel 12. You see, your TV keeps telling you it's channel 12, but it's actually channel 9. It's very confusing how this all works. And everybody else is up there. You know, channel 3 is actually way up there in the 40s somewhere. I think channel 17 was a lucky one. They went from channel 17 to channel 18. but everybody else has been shifted around. So that's all I can tell you.
Well, I hope that it gets to the question of the caller. We have time for some others. We have about 10 minutes left, a little more, with Rich Warren, consumer electronics writer, has a regular column in the News Gazette paper. And as occasionally here on the show, we talk about audio and video. Questions are welcome. Because there is now a lot of television that's available through the Internet, I wonder how many people, as they're thinking, maybe they're thinking about buying a new television, or even they're thinking about the television they've got, the question is, can I plug the Internet into my television so that I can watch whatever is there on the Internet and get it right into my TV?
There are half a dozen boxes out there that will do that. They cost a couple $100, $200, $300, and they do exactly that. They connect to your broadband. They only work with broadband, by the way. Don't even think about it. And even with regular broadband, you need really high-speed broadband. And then you can use them to tune the Internet on your television, assuming your TV has the right inputs, because a lot of these boxes, they still require either, most of them have an HDMI output, so you need an HDMI input. Some of them also have composite, component rather, outputs, you know, the red, green, and et cetera. Those work with most TVs, but make sure the outputs of the box match the inputs to your television. If you have a recent television you bought in the past 2 or 3 years, you don't have a problem. But if you have an older television, you may not be able to do it. Yes, you could put an RF modulator, and that really, it's too kludgy. It's going to ruin the quality. Also, like what I've been doing is using a computer. I have the computer I use for a recorder also attached to the Internet. But there are so many things you need to be aware of as far as being able to fine-tune the aspect ratio and the overscan, underscan, so it fills the entire screen. There are so many gotchas that it's still at the point, it'll be great when the public can simply get the box that works just like a TV set. When it's built into the TV, and Samsung and Sony are starting to do that now, is build it right into the TV, plug the TV into the Internet, the TV tunes straight from the TV. It's a piece of cake. But as long as you have to have an outside box, and I think we've provoked a lot of listeners to call in and ask about these things, but you can, in fact, watch the Internet on your television. And you can do it either through a computer, if you have the right kind of computer, or you can buy one of these boxes, and there's all kinds of alternatives as far as how you choose which. I won't even go into that. It's just too complicated.
Okay. Well, we'll try to answer some more questions here. Next is line one, and a person and someone here in Champaign. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
I have an old Ensoniq keyboard, SQ Plus, something like that. I had it in a box for a long time. I took it out. I haven't found all the audio cards that go with them, and I think I'm not sure if any data is left on them, but I'm wondering, is there someone, do you make house calls?
No, I don't.
No, I'm just wondering, is there someone, I've even forgotten how to access anything about it. I'm just wondering if I should just trash it or try to find if there's still data on it and who in town would know how to do this.
Well, I can't I don't know anybody who specializes in that area. I do know that Radio Doctor still does service units, and they might be able to give you some pointers in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And the fellow I normally use, I don't think he specializes in that area, so I won't recommend Jesse Swinderman. He's great at setting up TVs and stuff, but mm-hmm. I'm not sure he would know what to do. But I'd call Radio Doctors, ask if they have any idea.
Okay.
That's about as far as I can lead you, because that's a unique problem. I mean, that's a very narrow issue with a keyboard,
right.
And it's not my expertise.
Oh, yeah, okay. And also, I was wondering, this last question is, what do you think of the Slingbox?
I've heard some very good reviews of it. That seems to be a very practical thing to buy. I haven't used one, so I can't give you any firsthand, hands-on experience. The trouble is I'd love to be able to get all these boxes and compare them, but the newspaper doesn't buy these things for me. And they don't send them for free, so it's a matter of when I get the budget of trying to add these things to my system to try them out. But I've heard some very favorable things about the Slingbox.
Okay, great. Okay, thank you so much.
All right, thank you. Over to Indiana, line 4. Hello.
Hello. Hi. Fortunately, I think I know the answer to this one since I've been listening to the program, but I have 1,400 VHS tapes that I taped to Turner's and American Movie Classics, and I finally got back into their, about after on the 8th year, they started repeating things, so I stopped recording. And I was happy. Then the DVD came by, and so I picked up a lot of old black and whites that are out of copyright, you know, cheap, you know, 50 cents a dollar. But the better films that I'm interested in are DVD, and I was hoping that there would be still be made a combo with VHS and DVD possibilities, but they seem to be disappearing from the big box stores and every place else I've been. So I'm in the situation that eventually, I'm not going to be able to look at my tapes at all because there won't be anybody making VHS. And I was wondering if you think this is the way it's going to go, or is there some sort of fix that possibly could be made if I get a hold of somebody who knows something about electronics?
Well, yeah, VHS has definitely gone away. However, if you go on the internet, you can still find the odd VHS deck, or I think there may still be one or two combo units in existence. Yes, you're right. They're gone from the big box stores, but there may be some. You may what you can find on the internet. And or your other option, if you want to convert them, is there are companies that specialize. You send them a box of VHS tapes, and at a remarkably low cost, they send you back a box of DVDs with your tapes. I mean, it's not free, but it's some reasonable figure, like $5 a tape or something. Mm-hmm. And they can do it in high speed. They have ways of getting this done, you know, in a fairly economical way.
Uh-huh.
I know they do. People send them a lot of, you know, camcorder videos that they want preserved because you can't play those anymore. And so I would just go on the internet, and if you're using, you know, Google or Bing is it or whatever the search engines are, just type in VHS to DVD, and you'll get a lot of it. I can't, you know, verify the honesty of all these places, but I've read about several of them that seem to have a very good reputation. In fact, when you have your photography expert on, I think he's
Brian?
Talked about that.
Yeah.
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 That you can get your photos put on DVDs,
right.
or you know, something like that. So there are sources to use that can help you out. So if you want to take your most treasured ones and try that out, that's one thing. Or the other thing is if you can get a working VHS deck and a computer, there are, you know, photo capture cards, video capture cards, and now that Microsoft builds that particular module into all of its new operating systems, I think both Vista and Windows 7 have that module that you can record into the machine from any capture card and preserve it as a video on your computer, and then you can burn a DVD from that. So that's another option.
Good. Okay. Because a lot of the movies I'm interested in, they're not going to put on DVD, that's for sure.
No. That's right. There's some I'm still looking for.
Ones that people know about. But I'm really into the creaky stuff. You know, maybe two or three companies did them, you know, on what they called Poverty Row, I think it was, where he had some off-the-wall producers and stuff did some very interesting things but never reappeared because it just didn't make money. I've got them on tape, but I want to get them on DVD if it's possible. Thanks a lot.
All right. Very good. Thank you. Let's see, back here to Urbana for our next caller. This is line 2.
Yes.
Yes.
Good morning.
Yeah.
I'm in the market for an MP3 player or an iPod. I never had one before, and I've researched it, and I'm thinking about an 8-gigabyte Sony. I wondered if you could discuss any differences between the two. I'm just going to be listening to music on it.
Well, the sonic qualities are pretty minimal. I mean, the differences between players now are not great. Sony makes a very good product. The iPod, the Apple iPod, is virtually industry standard. And the issue is, and I discovered this, I wanted to buy a Microsoft Zune, for example. I thought that was a really cool, I liked it better than the iPod Touch. Turns out, though, that all the adapters, all those things you can put your player into to hear big sound, you know, like the Bose adapters, et cetera, they only work with iPods.
Oh.
And so, yeah, Sony, I'm sure, makes adapters for its players, but you're limited to the accessories. I mean, there's a gazillion accessories out there. There's a company in Tennessee that makes nothing but accessories for the iPod. They have a catalog of literally 2,000 or 3,000 items. I think they're called Griffin. And they make nothing but iPod accessories, power supplies, car adapters, cases, you know, and you go through the line, whether it's Bose or Altec or JBL or whoever it is, for these, you know, stands where you can put your iPod and listen to music. And it's all iPod. And I thought, well, maybe somebody makes an adapter for the Zune. I went through the entire internet. I spent 3 hours, could not find anybody who even made an adapter. So the Sony is a good unit, and Sony does make very good product. But you have to be aware that, you know, and you probably pay less for it, too. I bet it's $20 less than the comparable Apple product because they don't have the name anymore that Apple does.
Uh-huh.
But you're limiting yourself to the Sony universe when you do that because it may not be compatible with the accessories that are sold for iPods.
Well, what I really wanted to do was to download that music and then take it out to my stereo in the garage and play it through my 30-year-old Sansui stereo.
Well, there are adapters that at least come out of the headphone jacks that you can plug into any your Sansui or anything else. And so the Sony will work just fine for that. Then your question is, do you want to deal with Sony's online sources for music? I forget which companies it uses to download music. Or do you want to use the iTunes Store?
Mm-hmm.
And the iTunes Store, once again, has probably the largest variety of anything on the Internet and also is one of the more expensive ones. But it's built to work with an iPod and it's seamless. You have to, if you buy the Sony, then you have to go to the source for the Sony online downloads, and that's another issue. So
you only have to deal with those if you want to purchase music?
Right. Okay. If you're just copying your own CDs, then there's no problem.
Okay. Well, you've answered my question then. Thank you very
Maybe
much.
Maybe just one other thing I would say, just from my personal experience, you would be surprised at, you might think 8 gigabytes is a lot.
Uh-huh.
But you will be surprised on how quickly that fills up. So I would suggest you, if you can afford it, get as much memory as you can.
Okay.
Yeah, David's right about that.
Okay, well, thank you.
All right, and we'll go one more here. Savoy, line one. Hello.
For the gentleman who is looking to transfer his VHS to DVDs, Walmart sells a Magnavox unit for about $150, and I've had excellent luck with it.
And that's a truly great price.
Yes, yes it is.
So, because I remember the ones that were being sold in the big box stores were up in the $200, $225 range.
Yeah,
so.
Well, I bought it on sale for $98, actually, and I had some trepidation about the quality, but it's actually superb.
Well, I would suggest that if somebody's going to buy one of those, they do it now, because
yes,
they
absolutely
may not find it on the shelf 6 months from now.
Buy two.
Yeah, buy two. One is a spare. At that price, you buy two.
Absolutely.
All right.
Okay, thanks
very
for calling in.
Right.
We're just about the part we have finished. There's so many things we could talk about. One thing that I thought was very interesting, and we've talked about how in our day, having the best stereo that you could have was the thing, and about the quality, how many people despair of the quality of MP3s. I was really struck by the fact that there is still, it may not be as much as it was, there is still high-end audio. You can still spend pretty much about as much as you would possibly care to spend on receivers and on speakers. That is it, but it has to be less than it has been in the past.
Actually,
it?
It's holding up amazingly well. If you go over to Champaign Audio or Glenpoore Audio Video out in Old Farms, Jeff Poor gave me a tour of that shop about 6 months ago. And first of all, the sound quality of some of the systems is just mind-boggling.
I'm sure.
But
I'm
you
sure.
can also buy a fairly nice house for what the stuff, some of that stuff costs.
Yes.
But people yes. still buy that stuff. I have a friend who's a dealer in the Chicago area, and he's still selling a lot of very expensive systems because some people, that's their passion. Hmm. And rather than buy an $80,000 car, they spend $80,000 on a sound system. And I must say that it sounds wonderful. And they're still playing LPs. And if you keep your LPs in pristine condition and have a really great phono cartridge and a really great turntable, the sound quality can be absolutely, I can't describe it. It's mesmerizing.
Well, I wonder if there could be, in fact, if you could tap into this market, a potential market for people who've grown up with MP3s. If you say to them, come here, and you sit them down in a good room with a good system with maybe something that they're familiar with as an MP3 and with or maybe like a high-quality MP3 or whatever, and you sit them down and you play it for them, it's gonna blow them away, and that there will be people who might say, okay, I have to have this now. Maybe once they have a home and once they have a place that they can set it up, that there might if you can find the way to hook those people, you might actually be able to sell them stuff like that.
Well, except everybody these days seems to be on the go with short attention spans. And when we were younger, the idea was to sit down in your easy chair, put your feet up, and listen.
Right. Yeah.
Now people want to watch their movies on iPhones. And they have 46-inch TVs, but they want to watch their movie on iPhones,
yeah.
Which makes no sense to me at all. But they want to take it with them. They want to watch it while driving or, you know, on the bus or the train or whatever. And I'm not advocating driving, watching movies. I'm just saying people are doing it, which just scares the heck out of me.
Yeah.
One last comment. Not all MP3s are universal, because you can actually increase the quality of MP3s. I use a 320 sampling rate, which makes MP3s sound as good as CDs. So if you're willing to take that much more of your 8 gigabytes and fill up the space,
that's the problem.
You can get better quality sound. It won't be the same as a pristine LP played on the best turntable, but it's still better than what people call MP3s normally.
Well, we got to leave it there. I'm sure in another day Rich will be back. Look for his column in the News Gazette. And there's the show. What's the name of that show again?
Oh, yeah, that's the Midnight Special.
And when can you hear that show?
Saturdays at 2 on AM 580.
All right. Thanks very much. Rich Warren.